your partner's other partner gets sick, and so then you use that as like, well, you can't see them for 3 weeks. Mm. And if you've seen them or have been intimate with them or touched them, like, I'm going to be punitive and like not touch you or kiss you or anything like that. And I'm like, don't do that.
Welcome to the Multi-Amory Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
We believe in looking to the future of relationships, not maintaining the status quo of the past.
So whether you're monogamous, polyamorous, swinging, casually dating, or if you just do relationships differently, we see you and we're here for you.
On this episode of the Multi-Amory Podcast, we're talking about how to stay healthy within your polycule, within your community, within your group of friends, within your family, whatever it is. Now, I do want to say up front here, we are recording this during this whole coronavirus thing. We're going to talk about that a little bit, but this is not an episode about COVID-19 or coronavirus. So if you're sick of hearing that sort of stuff, don't worry. That's not what this episode is about. However, if that is something that you're worried about, we are going to be talking about things that do apply. See there? It's like, it's not exactly about that. It's universally applicable stuff about wellness and health in our communities, especially with people that we're in close proximity with. So it's going to be a good one. It's one that we've been meaning to do for a long time, and we figured, well, now's as good a time as any.
See, the thing is that we were all into being healthy before the coronavirus thing happened.
Oh, I see. Okay. Let's pat ourselves on the back here.
Really into like hand sanitizer and hand washing before coronavirus was a thing, and now everyone's on the bandwagon. No, funny thing is actually, literally last week, there was a new study released about polyamorous communities and polyamorous people. Specifically, the intention of the study was to try to find the origins of stigma toward non-monogamous relationships, which is really interesting.
That's cool.
And they found a variety of things. One of the things they found is that like the people who are more likely to be in consensually non-monogamous relationships are also less likely to be germophobes, funnily enough.
That makes sense.
Okay, I can see that.
Which totally makes sense, because it's like if you're not weirded out by like kissing more than one person, you know,
right, or
I think
holding
that makes
hands
sense.
With people, or yeah, any of that.
Now, you would think that them, they found a number of other things also that, like, you know, people in consensually non-monogamous relationships are more likely to be okay with casual sexual relationships and stuff like that. So they found those things. However, part of like the stigma research was that they found that, like, even though on an individual level, someone's less likely to be a germaphobe or something like that, in practice, they tend to have actually very good, especially sexual health practices because of that. So they're talking about how it's like, huh, interesting, on an individual level, you can see someone who's more comfortable with casual sex or more comfortable with germs in general. And yet in practice, they don't do those things. And so it's kind of like in the gap is kind of where stigma comes, essentially.
And by don't do those things, you mean don't do risky behaviors in either case? Is that what you're talking
about?
Yeah,
it's like this weird thing.
That was
thing
a weird way to
like,
say that.
Sorry. Sorry. I do not have the text of the study in front of me. It's purely just coming out of my brain in bits and pieces. Yes, that on an individual level, people in non-monogamous relationships maybe have the personalities of someone who is more likely to engage in risky behavior, and yet in practice, they often do not, basically.
Interesting.
Like, that they do take more risk
that they do
management,
take
like
more
proactive
risk, yes,
things.
More okay. risk management actions.
Wow.
Yes. There you go.
Okay.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
Kind of the best clear, of both worlds. Clear as mud.
Clear as mud. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah, so we have a lovely friend by the name of Fee who has been on the show before. She has a great polyamoring blog, and also her podcast is called Polyamoring. And she had this great blog entitled Health and Wellness in Polyamory. And so we really wanted to touch on a couple things today that she discussed in it, since it kind of pertains to some of the concerns that we have heard from our community. Our community has been talking about the coronavirus some, and sort of like just how it's affecting their day-to-day interactions with people, maybe going to play parties, doing things like that. And so when I was, you know, looking up stuff for this episode, Fee's blog came up and it was fantastic. I loved what she had to say about all of this.
Yeah. So you pulled this quote from Fee's blog, which, to give our listeners some context, this was a text that Fee received from a metamore talking about, you know, the challenges of dating multiple people and catching illnesses from each other and things like that. And that her metamore texted her, you know, polyam authorities do tend to gloss over stuff like how to handle cold and flu season or how to navigate changing dates and plans due to illness, how to support each other if illnesses take someone out short term and stuff like that. And so I know that that was part of the inspiration for Fee to write her blog about health and wellness. But let's dive into that. Why do you think that this is something that, like, the people who, the quote unquote polyam authorities, which,
like,
makes us sound,
who's this authority?
Makes us sound, like, I know, like, I was police, like, force.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we do joke about that.
Like, yeah, the we always tell jokes. Yeah, the polyamory board of directors. I definitely have some theories about why this is sometimes glossed over, but what do you all think?
Give it to us. What do you got?
Please, by all means.
Okay, well, I think that we, like, people who talk about this stuff or make content about this stuff, we tend to put a pretty heavy emphasis on sexual health because... Right. For better or worse, that's the first thing that tends to come to most people's minds is, like, what about the sex? Like, what about the STIs? Oh, you know, what are you going to do about that? And but also people, you know, having just legitimate questions and concerns of how do I navigate this? How do I talk about this? So we tend to put a lot of emphasis on that. I will say that, like, there's, like, one blog post from a couple of years ago entitled, like, The Dark Side of Polyamory that is kind of this semi-parody post.
I was just about... illness, right?
Yeah, it's about the fact that, like, oh yeah, when you're in your polycule, everyone gets sick at the same time and it really sucks. And I do think, though, that part of trying to manage stigma is not wanting to be like, yeah, germs get spread, you know?
Interesting.
Like, yes, yeah. We really are the awful, horrible, filthy, bacteria-ridden petri dishes that you think that we are, and so all your stigma is justified. So I think that's why people are like, oh yeah, colds and flu is, like, whatever, people deal with it, and there isn't a lot of content out there that's specifically about, like, hey, we do have to think about this and manage this stuff.
Yeah, but that's the thing in, like, any community that's super close-knit. I mean, I'm in a play right now, and a ton of people are sick, including myself, because we are in such close proximity to each other. This show gets very sexual at times, and there's a lot of, like, kissing and drinking out of glasses on the stage and all this crap. And I'm like, yeah, no wonder we're all sick. It makes a lot of sense. But that is the question, like, how do you kind of support each other when something like that comes up? And how do you sort of prepare yourself for the inevitable when you might get sick from other people or, you know, I don't know. Do you, what do you do in order to make that not happen?
Yeah, I think with this question of, you know, why do people gloss over it? And then also, you know, why does the board of directors gloss over this? And then also, what I always like to do is to look at what are other kind of analogous situations to look at where we do talk about this so that we can apply it, right? Like when you think about metamores, like you think about in-laws or something, right? That there's kind of, like, ways of being like, well, what's the closest relationship I could think of it's like that? And when I think about a polycule specifically, the thing that comes to mind for me is a family. And it's kind of the same thing, right? Your kid and your family get sick, they come home, and then everyone gets it, right? You know, brother and sister and mom and dad, everyone gets the sickness. And what's interesting about that, though, is... it's also a thing that doesn't get talked about a lot within families. There's kind of this assumption that, oh, well, whatever, you know, you're in that family, so if everyone gets sick, you're just going to get sick, or you just need to take care of them and hope that you don't. Like there's not a lot of people, I think, in any context, really talking very matter-of-factly about it, just illness and wellness and not spreading things if you can help it. That's one. But then on that same note of thinking about families, I know that there are some families I know where it's like that. It's like one person gets sick and then everybody gets sick. And I also know some families where that doesn't happen. And I do think, and we'll get into this more in the second half of the episode when we talk about, like, real practical day-to-day things that you can do to help both not get things, but also to not spread things. But anyway, I do think there's a variety there. And I think the same is true with close groups of friends or with polycules or things like that. It's depending on There are things you can do to affect that risk, you know?
Yeah.
And coworkers. Yeah, exactly.
So we're going to discuss three different topics that she talked about within that text that she got from her metaphorical.
She metaphorically got this from her metamor.
Exactly. No, I think she actually did get it. But so the first one's going to be how to navigate changing dates and plans due to illness. So Fee does talk about some of these things in her blog post. Again, go back and read that. But we wanted to kind of touch on each of them and speak about each of them. So some of these are from my brain. Some of them are from Fee's. Just wanted to point out that, yeah, Fee did inspire me a lot when doing this. So thank you again. So if we are going to navigate changing dates and plans due to illness, so some things to ask yourself might be, is the date going to be changed to a later time if you or your partner gets sick? Are you going to have something like a makeup date? Is it just going to be a wash? I know when I was dating multiple people, like I generally would have, okay, like a couple nights a week or one night a week would be with a certain partner. And then, you know, if that night just ended up like going away, then you might have to ask the question of like, what happens then?
Right. I think this especially comes up when people do have somewhat rigid rules in place, even if they call them agreements, if they're kind of rigid, where it's like, you only get Wednesdays with that partner and everything else has to be with me.
That's a great point. In situations like this,
especially if you haven't had this conversation beforehand, it's like you just said, it's like, well, what happens then? Do I just not get to see them at all? Does it get to be scheduled for another time? What, you know, what's the deal? We'll get to this a little bit more later, but like, are they allowed to come over and help take care of me while I'm sick? You know, there's lots of things that it can be hard to have that conversation when you're feeling shitty and sick or feeling sad that your partner canceled on you, you know, on both sides too. Maybe you're the one who got canceled on because they're feeling sick, and maybe you're the one who has these strict rules in your relationship. And now you're like, well, can I accommodate that or not? We have to have a conversation about it. So I think it's worth addressing. Yeah,
absolutely. That's something to talk about and something that hopefully will be brought up with all of this going on, just because people may not have thought about it beforehand. So along those lines, do you go to things like play parties or events with multiple people if you are ill, or if your partner is ill, if you have been around people that have been ill? Is that something that you're going to go to and take that risk? So we did have a thread in our Facebook community, our Multi-Amory patron-only group, about this topic specifically. Like, have you seen events canceled or play parties or things along those lines? Has that changed at all because of the, you know, scare around COVID-19? So that was kind of an interesting conversation. And a lot of people said, no, things are going on just as normal. You know, that's not something that is really being thought about at this point.
Can we, I would like to envision a future. Sorry, I'm cracking myself up just thinking about it. I want to envision a future where we're teleconferencing to our play parties more frequently.
Oh, teleconferencing.
Wow.
I'm sure someone's done it. I mean, I know there's like cam rooms and like chat rooms where people, you know, cam and stuff like that. But I don't know. I'm just thinking about the, like, you know, like a in-person play party event that's canceled due to, you know, fears of coronavirus or stuff like that. But instead we have the proxy that is like a big old like Zoom room full of people just doing it,
writing about,
like,
you know what? Yeah, no, like on the camera. What are you envisioning here?
What I love about this is because, yeah, like you said, that's like chat roulette was that, you know, but whatever.
Gosh.
There's things like that where it's just like camming in a room. But what I think is interesting is if you did it and structured it like a play party, and that you had like social areas. You had social areas as well as little private rooms, and you tried to like virtually structure that same sort of thing. That's interesting.
Honestly, I'm sure it probably already exists. I don't think the three of us are like super connected to that particular world enough to know of it,
but I'm sure
someone's already done it. Like the Zoom conference version of a play party event.
Yeah, that's true. Though I'm also realizing now that many years ago, I've probably been to stuff like this, but in Second Life. You know,
okay,
because then you actually have rooms that your avatar can walk between and interact with people. So
then you got to pay for those animation packs and stuff like that. But
Well, it has made me wonder, like, are the big conferences, like polyamorous conferences that happen every year, are those going to just end up being more, you know, online? So you go and go into a giant Zoom room or something and like watch somebody do a talk and then that's it, instead of having to actually get together.
There has been a push for that. I have seen there have been a couple online conferences now, particularly more for like making just it accessible to people who can't necessarily get out of the house.
Absolutely.
Or can't afford to get out of the house or can't afford to go get a hotel room somewhere or have special like accessibility needs that are just better met via like teleconferencing, things like that.
Yeah, I think it does. It's an interesting point to be made that like, what is the meaning of community? Does it mean that you need to all get together and actually like be in physical proximity with one another? Or can you actually have a community when you are, I don't know, just sitting there on your computer and like talking to someone the way that we're talking right now?
Right.
Like, is that still community in a way?
Yeah, I think as far as the online community thing goes, kind of like came up in our episode with Andy talking about restorative justice, but we also talked about how a lot of the online community platforms, Facebook specifically, are not set up to truly like foster the supportive type of community that I do think you can get in in-person gatherings more easily. And instead is kind of set up to reward controversy or just sort of talking at other people about something or arguing even. So I do think that that idea of doing something that's accessible online is interesting. And I think the same thing as this sort of play party analogy of like, what if you tried to take all the things that make up a play party and include that, like all the parts of it, not just the play part, in your online version of it? I think the same, I would say, would be true of these things is like, if you're going to go that direction, make sure there's also ways for people to connect in other ways, like do what you can to foster as much face-to-face interaction, like in video groups, or have a sense of like interactivity and that you're sort of included in something. And I know there's platforms out there, and this episode isn't about how to make your conference be online, but I do think it's worth thinking about that. Yeah, it's worth thinking about that. And I think we'll get to it a little bit in our bonus episode for this one when we're talking about like our favorite sick day activities, is similarly like how it's possible to not be with people but still feel close to them and things like that. Yeah.
So finally, in this one, we wanted to ask the question, how do you support your partner if it's another partner whose plans got canceled? So for example, I mean, if you are in a hierarchical setting and say like Jason Dedeker are together and I get my plans, you know, canceled because I'm sick with Dedeker. So how does Jace help her and me, the, you know, make those plans happen again in the future or at a later date? So like, do you give them a little leeway? Do you try to keep your own plans as best you can? What happens within those settings?
Yeah, well, that's another question to ask, because I know something that I see a lot of couples do starting out is kind of like, okay, well, when you go out on a date, I go out on a date. But if your date cancels, then you have to cancel your date also, you know, or things like that. And just talking about that ahead of time, you know, even it doesn't even have to be sickness related, but just like if your date cancels, what happens? You know, do we proceed as planned? Do we need to do anything different? I mean, I think the ideal would be if you committed to a date, still go on your date or whatever, but like having that conversation, because it's probably likely going to happen.
Yeah. And it's a balancing act too, because on the one hand, I find, you know, when you do have good communications with all your partners and metamors are supportive of each other, you can have a situation where it's like, I have a date with a different person planned on Friday, but you know, Dedeker has to cancel on Tuesday because she's sick. I talk to the one on Friday and say, like, this is Dedeker's only other day off. She's hoping she's better by now. If you're flexible, could we move ours to a different day? You know, there can kind of be this chain reaction of scheduling changes that can happen.
Yeah.
But you can also get yourself in a situation where, especially if one person has a more like volatile schedule than the other, where then someone can start feeling kind of put out or taken for granted, or like their commitments aren't being honored. So there is sort of this balance between like the beauty of flexibility, but also like remembering to be respectful and be understanding of other people's time and their and your commitments to them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and maybe that does mean, unfortunately, you just don't get to see that partner this week. Like, maybe that is the right answer. I'm not saying that one or the other is always going to be the right one, but you gotta look at that balance.
Yeah, being flexible is definitely a necessity in times like this, or just in any time where maybe there's an illness going around.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and right, this also applies, I would say, not just in polycules. I do want to keep, like, this, none of this conversation is really just specific to polycules. Like, certain things tend to come up more often in that, like, you know, like these rules or agreements and hierarchy and stuff like that. But it takes place other times where it's like, this is my one day a week I get to see my friend and we have to cancel. You know, the same stuff applies. So,
mm-hmm.
Okay, right. Yes, Emily, let's move on to the next topic here. So this is about how to support each other if someone that you care about is sick, right? Whether this is a friend or a family member or something like that, right? Someone you would actually want to be involved in taking care of. So the first one that we have here is offering to bring over wellness supplies. Now, this is one that, like, I can't think of very many times that people have done this for me, but when they have, it has been huge. Because if you're sick, you know, you've got a sore throat, you got a cough, whatever it is, you might not have all of the cough syrup that you want at home, or you might not have your lozenges, or you might run out of your vitamins or something like that. And it is this kind of like, well, I need those things. I could order them online, but they might take a couple days to get to me, and like, I need to take them right now. I don't really want to get dressed and go outside, go to the store, potentially get other people sick to get those things.
Mm-hmm.
It is really nice to have someone come in and bring that to you. So I'd say that's a very sweet thing. And if I'm sick, you know, think about that as an option.
Heck yes. I've definitely done this for people. I can't imagine that I haven't at least done it once for you.
No, I think you have. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe when we live together, I don't know.
Yeah, probably. Probably sometime during that time. Okay, the next one here is helping out with small tasks around the house, such as, you know, it could be anything as big as like taking their car to the shop if they have an appointment for that, or just like taking out the trash or doing the dishes if you're over. Bonus benefit of doing the dishes is lots of soap on your hands, washing your hands a lot, keeping the place cleaner. Yep. So you're less likely to get sick.
Yeah.
But, you know, like running errands, bringing something to the post office, stuff like that.
And a good hack for this, I think we covered this on our episode on loss, on supporting a partner through loss, is rather than just asking the person who's sick, hey, is there anything I can do for you? Because, like, honestly, in our culture, the polite thing is to be like, no, it's okay.
Yeah,
like,
that's,
no,
that's
just
a good
thank
point.
You for what you've done. You know, maybe the no is correct. Maybe they really don't need you to do anything. It's going to be more effective if you ask something like, hey, can I do your dishes for you? Hey, can I do your laundry for you? Hey, I'm going to go to the store. Can I bring something back for you? You know, like actually offering something more specific makes it a little bit easier for people to receive help if it's kind of more like your idea rather than putting it on them to ask for something. So that's something to think about if you're supporting a partner, a metamor, a family member through illness.
That's great. Yeah. I found recently hanging out with one of my best friends and his wife who have a 10-month-old baby right now is that if I ever am over at their place and I ask like, oh, is there anything I can do to help, you know, get set up for dinner or, you know, whatever it is that we're doing, if I see that they're kind of running around, the answer is always, no, we're fine. Have a seat. You're a guest. But if I just do stuff, it's usually received, especially after like the most recent time I was over there and I just like cleared my own place and like washed off my dish. That she was like, oh my gosh, like, thank you for every time you're over being so helpful.
Aww.
Like it was something that really meant a lot to her because I just did it and took the initiative. And I think that definitely applies here as well.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. Our next one is calling or texting or messaging, you know, it depends on how much this person likes receiving calls. I know sometimes if I'm sick, I'm like, nah, leave me alone.
Don't talk to me.
But other times it is nice to just hear someone's voice, especially if you're sick in bed for a while, where you start to really get that, like, I've just been sitting here on my phone for days now, that it is nice to actually talk to people.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this one's nice. And one thing I will add to this is to check in, but also maybe go a little bit out of your way to send them random funny things or just random like have little discussions. So every conversation you have isn't about how are you feeling? Because that can also get really tiring if someone's sick for a while. It's like all anyone talks to me about is how sick I am. Yeah. And the last one that we want to talk about in this section of taking care of someone kind of goes along with the second one about little small tasks or errands and things like that is making sure their pets are taken care of. Specifically, like if the dog's been walked, you know, cleaning out the cat box. But just the dog thing, if it's like you see them kind of trying to drag themselves out of the house, you could be like, oh, you know, I'd love to
really big
take
one.
The dog out. That'd be great. Right. That could be a big load off for them, just like clearing your dishes or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah. And make sure the pets are petted. I think that's the most important task, really.
Water bowls that they have, like water in their bowls, or even if like they need some more food or more cat litter or something along those lines, going to get that.
Yeah, that's
great. Those are important.
Yeah.
And you don't want to really drag yourself to the grocery store or to the pet store when you're sick.
Yeah, I will definitely just come out there and say it. I'm bad at this part of caring for a partner. I don't know why. I've definitely found that like people in my life run a gamut, you know, that I've seen in my experience of like, there's people who like the caretaking thing is just comes very naturally to them. And for some people, not so much. Mm. I've been trying to dive into my own family of origin to figure out like my narratives around getting sick and taking care of people. It's something that Gottmans actually talk about is that like,
oh, really?
Yes. That like the ritual around when someone gets sick, whether that's your partner or your child or whatever, it's like, that's important to talk about with your partner because that is something that can be very different depending on your family of origin. You know, like how do we care for people when we get sick? Because honestly, I think it came from a family where it was kind of like, I'm going to set the cough syrup outside your door and then I'm going to go around and disinfect all the surfaces. I respond today.
I have heard, Dedeker, that like your first response is just to go and like disinfect everything, like the doorknob and the like all the surfaces
light
and
switches.
Everything. If Jace gets sick.
Yep. Pretty much. Honey, I am thinking about that and trying to get better.
Right. And in my family, like a big one was specifically making beverages for the person who was sick.
Oh, yes. We did talk about that. You talked about the beverage
thing. We talked about this at a radar, like, I think.
How was that? What is it? Yours is like orange soda or it's like Sprite and... What
it's
is Sprite, it, Jace?
Sprite
and orange juice. Yes, that's what it is.
Orange juice. Or 7-Up and orange juice. Those mixed together was like the drink my mom would make and I would only ever have it when I was sick. And it was...
So funny.
You know, the idea is it's something delicious that then gets you to be drinking enough, you know, liquids while you're sick. It's also a lot of sugar, so I don't drink maybe as many of them as I did as a kid. But it is something that's really nice to have if I'm not feeling great. So stuff like that, though. Talk about, like, what are some things that to you mean being taken care of? And how can, you know, and that for your partner so you can offer that to them.
Definitely. Talk about your family of origins. Also talk about how sickness was dealt with when you were growing up. Because that can definitely offer some clues. Last section we're going to talk about here before our ad break is, you know, how like the logistics of really talking about, you know, handling cold and flu season in a multi-relationship setting. So things like, are you going to get a flu shot? How do you feel about flu shots? Is that something that we all agree to do? Like, you know, me and my partner, my metamor, we're all going to go and get a flu shot. You know, at the beginning of flu season, just to be careful and just to have some solidarity. Asking questions like, do you have people in your polycule or a metamor or someone in your life connected to you who is immune compromised? You know, that's also something very important. Or a parent, exactly. Yeah. Or a child, you know, that's stuff that's really important to know about, because even if you and your partner and your partner's partner and your other partner, whatever, even if everyone has a super healthy immune system, they may have people attached to them who do not. And so we need to think about those people too and still have some compassion and care.
Thanks for reminding me of that one, because it's something that I don't always think about. It is like very easy to just think about yourself and then maybe the people like just to the right and left of you, like the people that you see every single day, but not necessarily like their family members or their metamors or other people along those lines as well.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this has been on my mind recently when I was up in Seattle with my mom, like wanting to be extra careful because of her. Whereas now that I'm in LA and I'm just in a house with other people who are in their 20s and 30s, now I'm like, whatever. I don't have to worry about it.
Jeez, whatever, yuck. I'm gonna roll around in the dirt.
Exactly.
Kind of related to what we were talking about earlier is like, is there policy around helping to take care of those who are sick? Like, is that related to the relationship structure that you're in? Like, does hierarchy influence that? I can share a personal story about that, that honestly, like way back in the day when I was in much more strict hierarchical relationships, there was one time when like a partner of mine, like my primary partner, went like to a doctor's appointment with another partner, like to help support her and take care of her. And at that time, I was really upset by it, you know, because to me, I was like, this is too intimate. This does not fit into the hierarchy. Like, you know, like going to a doctor's appointment with someone that's a primary partner activity. And I have a monopoly on all the primary partner activities. Where I am now, I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, you know, your partners, go support them, like go take care of them when they're sick or, you know, go to the doctor's appointment with them or stuff like that. But that was something that back then we didn't talk about ahead of time. You know, we didn't talk about the feelings that brought up or what that meant to us. So that might be a conversation to have with your partner.
And I will say, both from my own experience and the experience of one of my friends, who both of us had doctor visits last year. His was more of an emergency and mine was more voluntary. But we had doctor appointments where at the time we each had two partners and both of those partners came with us to each of our appointments. And it was this really touching, like, wow, I do really feel cared about and loved, and that my partners came together to support me in this. It's like really nice, especially if you're there because you're really sick or something. It really means a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we both went to a Dedeker appointment too once upon a time.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that. Yeah. I drove you back, all of us back to from that. Yeah,
that was fun. Oh, that was
it
great.
Is nice.
That was great. I love that.
Lovely.
Yeah. And again, questions around policy and protocol. If you get sick, if your partner gets sick, if your metamor gets sick, stuff like that. Like, is our protocol going to be, we just kind of stay away from each other until someone gets better? I wrote down the question to ask yourself, are you going to weaponize this shit? Stuff that we like to talk about on this podcast, because unfortunately that is something that I have seen weaponized the same way that I think sexual health concerns can get weaponized, which is this idea of, you know, your partner's other partner gets sick. And so then you use that as like, well, you can't see them for 3 weeks. And if you've seen them or have been intimate with them or touched them, like, I'm going to be punitive and like not touch you or kiss you or anything like that. And I'm like, don't do that. Like, sure, take actions to protect yourself. So like, if you know that your partner's partner is sick, maybe you do take the action of like, okay, well, I'm going to disinfect some surfaces and I'm going to hug you, but maybe not kiss you for this week until it seems like things are okay. Like, that's okay. But if it's coming from a place of like being punitive or wanting to punish your partner, it's like, really just get real with yourself and honest with yourself about whether or not you might be weaponizing your health concerns. And another thing, as Fee does point out in her blog post, that these are questions that also can be asked about your boundaries with sexual health, with STI status and things like that as well.
Great. So we're going to move on now to talking a little bit about coronavirus, COVID. This also could apply to any kind of thing that's on the news a lot that a lot of people are very scared about. We want to get into protecting your mental and emotional health during those sorts of things. And then we're going to end with some just sort of concrete best practices about how to keep yourself and the people around you healthy. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick moment to talk about our sponsors for this episode so that you can help support us, get involved with some cool products, and then also help support this show and keep this going and make this available to everyone for free.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection.
And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love adamandeve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
All right, so let's just talk briefly about the elephant in the room, which is the coronavirus, because it is on a lot of people's mind right now. I know, Dedeker, you've said that clients have talked about it. People are talking about it on the news. When I'm, like, serving people at work, they're talking about it. I've been pretty sick recently, so it's something that has been on my mind. And our community also, our Multiamory Patreon community, has been speaking about this and posting articles, like, debunking myths. Also, like, things that they're hearing from various healthcare providers, etc. So things will probably be okay. The majority of people do recover from this and are totally fine or get a very mild case. But it is kind of important just to talk about some of the fears that people are having. So, Dedeker, you wanted to start off with the mental health regarding all of this as well.
Yeah,
how people can, like, stay mentally healthy during this fearful time.
Yes, because I do think since it's just, I mean, by the time this episode comes out, who knows how things are going to feel or what's going to happen. But as of the time of recording, it's just like feels like it's coming from all angles and it's hard to escape and everyone's talking about it. And so it can be really easy to feel really anxious, to feel really overloaded, to feel sick of it, to feel frustrated, to feel scared. Like it can bring up a lot of emotion. And I definitely found that I feel like almost no official sources are talking about your mental emotional health in the midst of all this. And I understand that it's like physical health. Physical health is the number one thing to be thinking about when people are worried about a virus, but your mental and emotional health is also really, really important in the midst of all this. So a couple things to bear in mind: that it's totally okay to take a break from social media, whatever your social media of addictive choice is. It's okay to take a break and let yourself just not scroll so often. You know, my partner Alex specifically put a filter on Twitter. You can filter out words on your Twitter feed. So he like put a filter so anyone mentioning coronavirus specifically would get filtered out. So it's like, that's okay if you want to carve out a space for yourself where you're not thinking about this all the time, because the way that our news cycle works is that, especially with things like this, they really make it easy for you to be thinking about it all the time. Yes. So take action, do what you got to do. It doesn't have to be a permanent break from social media. It could be a day, it could be a week, it could be a couple hours, you know, just whatever it is that you can carve out for yourself. It's also okay to be discerning and selective in where you get your information from. You know, of course, I would definitely recommend any place where you can go to kind of get like facts only without spin and without opinion would be great. You know,
that
so
can
things
be hard
like,
to find sometimes.
Which can be very hard. Yeah. Yes. Things like, you know, CDC website, World Health Organization website, maybe your local news or local health department if you need to stay updated on kind of what's happening in your locality, provided that looking at the local news is not going to suck you down a rabbit hole.
Where I'm like hesitant to even suggest that as something to look at. I do know something that's been suggested to me in the past just about kind of mental health in general with news is to get your news from a written source rather than television, and to just read through, you know, have like a certain amount of time each day. If you're someone who really wants to stay up to date on things, certain amount of time each day, you read through articles, you get it, you know what's going on, and then you stop and you don't do any more of it. Because all of it is set up of like, they make more money the more time you spend consuming their content, whether it's a TV show, news program, or whether it's a website or whatever. So it's in their best interest, unfortunately, to keep you upset enough and keep you addicted enough to keep reading it and keep being worried about it. So then you keep coming back to check more information. So find what that is for you that lets less of that play on you, right? Whether that is just a quick reading thing, or like, I know, Google Home and Alexa and stuff have options for like, give me the 5-minute summary of the news, or, you know, there's things like that that you can find. So that might be a good option.
Yeah. And then make sure that you're still taking the regular measures that you might take for caring for your mental health. So processing with someone that you trust and who has the emotional labor available for listening and processing with you, or talking to a therapist, doing art. If you have regular medication, make sure you're still on your medication, or meditating, or just your usual self-care practices. You know, it's still really important. Like, even if people are panicking, or even if it feels like everyone's talking about this, that you're still carving out time to take care of yourself and still prioritizing your mental health.
Yeah. And then also, it is okay to have boundaries, to tell people you'd rather not talk about it. I know that right now it feels like all anyone can talk about at work or with my family or anyone. And it can sometimes feel like you can't without being rude. But just like with any sort of boundary, it can be a little bit scary to actually enforce them and protect yourself. But it's okay to do, and it's actually a good thing. Right? Maybe they'll actually end up being relieved that you don't want to talk about it because they feel like they have to talk about it too. Right? So it's okay to have that. And then part of that could be removing yourself from the situation. So maybe it means for a while, don't have your lunch breaks in the break room. Go have them outside or try to find somewhere else, or listen to stuff on headphones or something like that to kind of remove yourself from the situation if you can.
Okay. So, you know, I think we've all heard the typical CDC guidelines a couple times now. A lot of these guidelines that they put out are not necessarily like COVID specific. It's like, these are things that the CDC has been saying for years. Like I said at the top of this podcast, we were all into being hygienic and washing your hands and stuff before it was cool.
I didn't ever wash my hands to the degree that you do, Dedeker. Like, I have to wash them a lot at work, but the fact that you say you're going to talk about like your hand washing regimen, and mine is never that specific and that like long, so I'm very impressed. But yeah,
I didn't honestly, I was also kind of bad at hand washing until I started traveling, honestly.
That makes sense.
Really shook up my priorities as far as like how I take care of my own health.
I mean, and I never, like, I'm sick right now, and I know that I have not disinfected this house like you would have, and that's maybe not great, so I should perhaps think about something like that, like all of the doorknobs all the time. It's like, do I do it constantly? What do you do, Dedeker? What do you do?
Oh, what do I do? Honestly,
is it like every day?
Love doing it. I feel like Marie Kondo. It's, and maybe it's mostly psychological, but I don't know. It's super simple. I just get like those like alcohol wipes and every surface.
Like, all right,
literally everything, you know, nooks and crannies, doorknobs, light switches. I like, my trick that I like to do is actually get several packs of disinfectant wipes and like put one in the bathroom, one in the kitchen, and like one in the living room. So it's always there. So it's just super easy, like after you use the bathroom or before you use the bathroom, to just like get the light switch, get the doorknobs, get the toilet flush handle, then go about your day. I don't know. I feel like a Disney princess, honestly, when I do it. I don't feel like a weird, like paranoid weirdo.
No,
I feel like Snow White cleaning out the house, or like Cinderella, like whistle while I work. Like, I feel good and pretty, and maybe that's weird.
No, I think that's great. I mean, hey, all right. Because for someone like me also, who really didn't take these things to heart until recently, like, let's just throw out the CDC guidelines.
Okay,
because, hey,
yes.
Not throw them in the garbage, like, but let's talk about them and then
throw it out there to our audience.
Yeah. We're going to put them on the table, on the pre-sterilized, disinfected table.
Exactly.
If you want to see a much more fun version of this, Vietnam's Vietnam Wait, put out.
Was it Vietnam?
Yeah, yeah, it was the Vietnamese government put out a video attached
you,
to a
John
really
Oliver.
Wonderful pop song about like, you know, washing your hands and staying away from crowds and stuff like that. And it is great. There's a dance that goes along with it, and it's fantastic.
I haven't seen this yet. I need to check that out.
Oh god,
yeah,
it's
Jace,
a good
definitely
song.
Go check it out.
There's a TikTok.
Yeah. So yes, just clean your hands often. Wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Like doctors say that like it really is specifically the scrubbing action that does it. So it's less important to make sure that you have an antibacterial soap or stuff like that. Like normal soap is fine. You know, sing happy birthday to yourself twice.
Yeah, this is the thing.
Yes.
That Dedeker does. That's so impressive to me. I'm like, two times of happy birthday?
It's really not that long. And it's like, happy birthday to me. It's great. You know, think of it as like a nice little thing.
It's
that
not
you
your birthday, though.
No, it's funny. Dedeker got me doing
it's
this
almost
recently.
My birthday, but.
Yeah, Dedeker got me doing this also a while ago. Again, we were doing it before it was cool. But I did find at first, especially, I just constantly through my day would have happy birthday stuck in my head. I'm like, why do I have? Oh, right. It's because I'm singing it to myself every time I wash my hands.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So again, wash your hands after you use the bathroom, blowing your nose, coughing, sneezing. When you come in
it's
after
all
being
time, though, right
yeah,
now.
When you come in after having been out and about in a public place, you know, it's a really good habit to get into. Like, I know Jace
My mom's
does this.
Great at that.
Yeah, I picked this up definitely after spending more time in Japan. Just like as soon as you come home, first thing you do is wash your hands.
Yeah, this one was really interesting to me picking it up in Japan. And it's also partly the way that Japanese homes and apartments tend to be set up where you enter through the kitchen. And it's like the people that I would know, and I didn't know this at first till I actually went over to people's places, but it's like you walk into your house, you go wash your hands, and then you go, well, okay, you walk in, take off your shoes,
yes.
Then you go wash your hands. And it's just that's like a habit and a ritual to get into. And it is something that once I started doing it, it now just feels really nice. It's like, oh, I'm home and my hands are clean. And I just feel like now I can kind of settle in and relax.
Yeah, and something else that I do as well to kind of attach some self-care, maybe some indulgence to it, maybe some more Disney princess feels to it, is I also like to invest in like a nice Burt's Bees hand cream because when you wash your hands a billion times, it does dry things out. And just like finishing up with that, like just you can make it nice. I think that most of us when we were kids were like forced to wash our hands by everyone and it turned into this like, ugh, I have to wash my hands kind of thing. But like you can make it real nice for yourself. Just find some joy in the simple things.
When I was a kid, go ahead.
No, go for it. No, I just was talking about this awesome aloe vera like hand cream that I have right now that works wonders. So go get some and use it to your heart's desire.
When I was a kid, my parents, you know, if you went to the bathroom, you had to wash your hands, right? And I didn't like it because like the water was cold or it was too hot or, you know, whatever. I was fussy about it, I guess. And what I started doing is I would just like run the sink for a little while and stand there so that they would hear the water running and think I had washed my hands. And then I would come out.
Oh.
And after I did this for a little bit, I kind of had this realization of like, oh, part of the reason I wasn't doing it is because I didn't want to take the time. And now I'm taking the time anyway. I might as well just wash my hands. And then just started washing my hands.
That's good.
It's just weird that it just seems like such an inconvenience when it's like really it's 20 seconds and it's kind of a nice little ritual.
Yeah.
And then also if soap and water are not available, you can use a hand sanitizer, use one that has at least 60% alcohol in it. But I do think the wording of this one is worth noting, which is if soap and water are not available. And what that means is that hand sanitizer is not a substitute for washing your hands. Partly because of the scrubbing thing like Dedeker was talking about, but also like having the water and the soap and everything is going to do a much better job. Now, if you want to add hand sanitizer on top of washing your hands, that's also a good way to go. But I just want to remind people that hand sanitizer is not a replacement. You could do it in a pinch, but also be sure you're washing your hands. And then to whatever extent possible is to avoid touching, quote, high touch surfaces in public places. So, right, things lots of people are going to touch, like...
Like the handrail or the escalator rail thingy-wingy, the doorknob.
That thingy-wingy, yes.
Elevator
yes.
buttons, the railings on subways, things like that, if you're taking public transit.
Yeah.
If you want a fun piece of trivia, I just learned that this is high touch surfaces in Japanese. The word is noko seshoku, which actually translates to like thick touch surfaces.
Oh. Ew. I know. Those thick touches.
They're thick with touching.
Wow. I know, which is maybe a little bit more gross. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
man.
What did they say? They're like, use a tissue or your sleeve to cover your hand, your finger if you must touch something. But also, yeah. I mean, yeah, like, okay, I think about this when I have to put gas in the car. That thing is high touch, thick with touch. And so are the buttons. And I don't know. Do I just like bring a hanky with me all the time? Like, what's happening here? I don't know.
Well, so this actually reminds me of...
just wash your hands afterwards.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to, is wash your hands. So it is something that I think in the interest of trying to be more hygienic, people can actually create some pretty unhygienic situations for themselves. One example of that is the whole sneezing into your elbow instead of into your hand thing. While if you're out somewhere where you can't wash your hands... that makes sense, so that you don't want that on your hands where you're touching surfaces and things. However, if you sneeze into your hands and then you go wash your hands, it's now taken care of. Whereas you sneeze into your elbow, how often
it's
do you wash
your
that
elbow.
Sweater or whatever, right? So it's one of those things where it kind of depends on the situation. And I think with this too, where people will be like, ooh, that's gross. I'm going to like pull my sleeve over my hand and open the bathroom door with that. And it's like, how many times... is that bathroom door now on your sleeve before you clean it? So it is kind of this thing of really think it through and don't just go, oh, don't touch anything, but really try to think through the steps of what's really going to be more clean. And often the answer is to just wash your hands after that, or to use a paper towel or a tissue or something that you're going to throw away.
Yeah. So the last CDC guideline is something that I'm absolutely terrible at, which is avoid touching your face, nose, eyes, etc. Because I was thinking about this the other day when I was at work, and I'm like, I have an itch. I need to touch it. I'm my nose is running. I need to, like, you know, wipe it away or something. I don't even know. I have something in my eye. I want to touch my eye, like all of these things. And it's terrible because I'm really bad at it.
Yeah, I really struggle with this one, too.
Yeah.
I just have an itchy face.
No, me too. Thank you. Of course. I agree. There's just like, I want to itch myself or touch myself. I don't know. And so I'm not quite sure what to do about this one, except for the CDC says don't do it. I'll maybe try to get better at it, but maybe just like have the cleanest hands ever and then you can touch your face. But if you do touch your face, then you need to wash your hands and vice versa. I don't know. What do you think, Jizz?
Yeah, this is one that I remember really noticing for the first time when I was living in Russia for a little while, is that my host brother, I was staying with a host family doing a study abroad thing, and my host brother was really good about not touching his face, like to rub his eyes or to itch his eyes specifically is what I noticed it with. And he would kind of, you'd see him sort of like blink a little bit harder sometimes, like if his eyes itched. And that's what made me first start to notice it, is he kind of had this weird blink thing that he would do. But I noticed he wasn't touching his face as much. And I was like, oh. And I did also just notice in general that in Russia, people that I knew at least seemed to be a lot more mindful about that kind of just like everyday ways that you can get sick, much more so than I was brought up to be. And I think some of that can be related to sort of, I think we sometimes have a bit of an American sort of cockiness about infection, thinking that, oh, well, it somehow doesn't affect me. And like, oh, if it does, I'll be fine because I'm a rugged individualist or whatever. And so it was something that I really noticed when I was there. And since then tried to kind of bring that to mind of like, okay, I know it's possible to do, so I can do this. I still really struggle with touching my face, though. How are you on this one, Dedeker? Do you have any good tips for that?
Well, that actually kind of leads into our next thing in talking about masks. And I know that like there's a billion articles out there about like, should you wear a mask? Should you not wear a mask? Stuff like that. But that's my thing, is I tend to only wear a mask when I'm on a plane. And again, was doing it before it was cool. Thank you very much. But I feel like that's the most effective thing, is that it enables me to like scratch my nose through the mask instead of directly putting my fingers all over my nose or mouth or whatever it is that But other than that, no, I'm terrible. I touch my face all the time. It's a way of life.
Yeah. I mean, even the ideal best practices for using surgical masks is not to touch the mask either. So that is...
Wow.
I know. It's a bummer. But I do find, though, if I have one on, it makes me at least more aware of that. And so hopefully it's like adds a little reminder of like, oh, right, don't touch my face. To just kind of have that on makes me more aware of it.
What if we all just used like that compressed air for cleaning out your keyboard?
Just like, have a can of it with you and just
and just your spray face. Yourself constantly.
Disclaimer,
I love
do,
that.
Do not do that. That would be very dangerous and very painful, but the image of it is funny to me.
I have found I do sometimes now, if my eyes are real itchy, like if I'm tired or something, I will sometimes go to the bathroom just to wash my hands so that I can rub my eyes guilt-free,
wow.
Proud to be. Yeah. So... that one's hard. I don't have a ton of good tips for it, but just sort of gradually becoming more aware of it. And the more often you wash your hands, the less of a problem it is. And then, yeah, we just wanted to say real quick about masks. Also, if you are sick and you have to be around people, please wear a mask. I know that in the United States and in, you know, Canada and a lot of Europe, it's people think it's weird.
I've literally been bullied on an airplane because of wearing
what?
A mask.
Yes.
And
again, before the coronavirus thing even happened, like I would wear masks on airplanes and yeah, literally bullied.
What did someone
stared
say?
At, harassed. It was a drunk person who like started this guy who literally was like touching me and like
ew.
Trying to grab me to like get my attention and harassing me because
you're
he
like,
thought
do not
like,
touch
he
me.
Assumed that if I'm wearing a mask, it must mean that I'm sick and I need to tell him what I'm sick with and stuff like that. I complained to the airline. They did nothing. So that was cool.
Boo.
Remember all those times when you're like, complain to the airline, they'll do something.
I know. And it's ironic. I complain about there being duct tape in the bathroom. They give me all these airline miles. I complain about being harassed by a drunken fool and they do nothing. So priorities.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Sounds about right. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that.
So, yeah. Cultural differences
like
aside.
Masks
is, yeah. Do
yeah.
it.
I like wearing them now. And I wore one to rehearsal the other day when I was super sick and everyone looked at me strangely and I was like, this is for you, not for me, for you.
Yeah.
I have to be all up in y'all's faces and you don't want that shit. You don't. So
that being said, yeah, please do not go out and panic buy masks like a bunch of people are doing. That's really not
you're
helping
probably not
things.
You're not even going to be able to find them. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Even so, you know, that means that then people who are sick who do need to wear a mask, people who do actually need to wear a mask for work, have a harder time getting them. So don't be a jerk and hoard masks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, the thing with masks is if you are someone who's like, do they really work? Basically, the quick summary of the findings on that is masks are actually quite effective at preventing you from spreading something to other people. They're a little bit not terribly effective at stopping you from getting stuff from other people in a controlled test. But to go back to what I was saying before, I find when I wear one, I'm also just much more aware of hygiene and germs and things like that. And so like when I wear one, when I travel, if I'm not sick, I will still wear one on a plane and it just sort of keeps me thinking about it. So I'm more likely to sanitize my hands and wash my hands and things like that. So I think there's actually more benefit to it than some of that research mm-hmm. would have you believe, because they're literally just testing how many pathogens get through the mask and get onto the person. And, you know, that's why it's very effective at stopping you from spreading it to people. It's why surgeons wear them, because out of their mouth is all sorts of stuff that could infect someone. So anyway, it is a good thing to wear, but especially if you are the one who is sick, to protect other
yeah.
people. I've worn them to bed before with Dedeker. When I've been mm-hmm. sick, I would wear a mask to bed. It helped
wow.
keep my nose a little more moist during the night, and then also kept me from coughing as much all over her and keeping that more
it's
controlled.
That's great. I
and she
it.
Didn't get sick that time.
And I didn't get sick, and I fell even deeper in love with you.
Wow.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah, last thing, and this one's hard, but it's if you have sick days at your work, take them if you're sick, you know. And if you are a boss who is able to give sick days, make sure you give them to people.
Yeah.
You know, I know that especially in American culture, we're really used to thinking like, oh, if I just have a small cold or whatever, like I'm putting people out. If I'm not coming into work, it's going to be better for me to come into work, even if I'm sick. And that is incorrect. You're not doing anybody any favors by coming into work when you're still sick. If you have sick days, take them, take care of yourself, things like that. Now, that being said, not everybody has sick days. I don't have paid sick days. Actually, honestly, most people that I know don't have paid sick days. A lot of us are working part-time or working freelance or working in the gig economy or stuff like that. So that it can definitely can be a privilege based on what your employment situation is. Something that I use that I find is really helpful for freelancers in general, there's this app called Catch that specifically, like, you link your bank account to it and you can tell it something like, hey, I want to be able to take 4 sick days and 7 vacation days this year, or whatever it is. It's purely, you know, you plug in how much you want, you plug in what your income is, and then it will essentially automatically deduct from your paycheck and just kind of put it into this separate account. Like, whenever your paycheck comes through, it'll be like, okay, we'll take out 6% of your paycheck or whatever. So that you can kind of essentially accrue almost like paid time off for yourself a little bit. You can take it out whenever you like, you know, so it's not stuck in there or anything like that. But I found that's been really helpful for me to encourage me to actually take time off when I am sick, because it's like, okay, well, I have a little bit of chunk of change here so that at the very least, I'm not totally sacrificing income by choosing to not work today. It's a great app. They do it also for retirement benefits, for health insurance benefits and stuff like that. But I find it's really helpful if you're freelance, if you're part-time, if you work at a job that doesn't have those kind of benefits, and it's helpful to you to have something that's automating it and making it so that, like, it's just already taken care of, kind of out of sight, out of mind, I really recommend it. And that's, we're not even being paid by Catch or anything like that. That's purely my personal endorsement for the app.
Right.
No, that's great.
I did want to throw out there too, if you're someone in a position, not even like you're the company owner or anything like that, but if you're like a lead for your department or you're any kind of manager or something like that, is to encourage your employees to take sick days, like not just to give them that option, but also to encourage it. Because I think, again, we all have this mindset of like, I'm somehow doing the right thing and doing you a favor by coming in while I'm sick, because I don't want to let you down and not do my work. And if you're coming into a workplace and then getting other people sick, you're actually costing everyone and the company more money to do that. So it's like, really encourage your employees to do that. It's something I like about the visual effects company that I work for, that they've always been very good about. If you're feeling at all sick, our HR guy will always be like, yes, please, like, go take your sick day. We're happy to pay you for it. Like, go take your sick day, go be at home, feel better, don't get anyone else sick, right? And I like that. I really appreciate that, because it takes away that guilt that we all feel when we take sick days, which really sucks that's kind of how our culture has decided to think about that.
Yeah, gosh, I'm bad and have in the past been really bad about taking sick days, and kind of prided myself on the fact that, like, well, even if I'm sick, I'll go in and it'll be fine.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I'm literally serving food to people. Like, I'm very careful when I am sick and when I go to work. But at the same time, like, so this last time when I was sick, I said to myself, no, you're not doing this again. So I took 2 days off. It was really good and necessary. And I think that it made a big difference in me getting better faster. I'm still kind of sick, but we're getting there. And yeah, I mean, do it. Just do it if you can. If you are able to, then please take those sick days, because it's incredibly important for not only your own health and well-being, but the well-being of those around you. So we are going to do a bonus episode for our patron-only listeners about our favorite sick day activities. We wanted to make it a little bit happier for you all and do kind of a fun bonus episode for everyone. So also, we wanted to hear from you, our listeners, about what it is that you do when you're sick in your polycule, in your community, how you help other people around you stay safe from your sickness, how you, like, best, you know, help the environment in terms of your surfaces, if you go on a disinfecting spree like Dedeker does, if you sing the happy birthday song as well, like what you do regarding all of that.
Tell us how you're staying mentally healthy also.
That's what I was literally about to say. Yeah, just how are you staying healthy during this time? Because it is a little bit scary for some people, and we just are there for you and are in solidarity with all of you in terms of mental health as well. Because, yeah, those things can get scary. So the best place to talk about all of this and share your thoughts with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread and our private Facebook group or Discord chat. You can get access to these groups and join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can email us at info@multiamory.com. Multiamory is created and produced by Jace Lindgren, Dedeker Winston, and me, Emily Matlack. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our production assistants are Rachel Schenowork and Carson Collins. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.